Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've invited author David Powell on the program to talk about his powerful memoir titled My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma, which is on shelves now and was published by Loving Healing Press. So a little bit about David. David's 13-month tour in Vietnam was a journey that turned him from a naive civilian to a battle-hardened combat veteran and clearly shows us all how fragile our humanity really is. In addition to killing the enemy on the field of battle, he was witness to countless cruelties, including murder, both cold-blooded and casual, cowardice under fire, and a callous disregard for life beyond most people's imagination. With each new insult, he lost a little bit of his soul. Upon returning to civilian life after a 2-year enlistment, he found himself with unmanageable psychological and emotional problems that would be diagnosed decades later as post-traumatic stress disorder. The price he paid was broken marriages and relationships, inability to hold down jobs leading to bankruptcy, alcohol abuse, and having to hide the service he was willingly gave to his own country. In 1989, David eventually recovered through a simple but powerful technique known as traumatic incident reduction, TIR, and he is now symptom-free. So this therapy is not just for veterans. It has since been successfully applied to crime and motor vehicle accident victims, domestic violence survivors, and even children. David's book, My Tour in Hell, shows what is possible for anyone who has suffered traumatic stress and that hope, healing, and recovery can be theirs too. And for those who are listening today over the internet, you can find David at mytourinhell.com. So I'm just really happy to have David on the phone today. I've known about him for a couple years, and I'm just so excited to have the chance to actually talk with him in person. So welcome, David, to Inside Scoop Live.
It is a sincere pleasure. I've looked forward to talking with you since I first heard we could chat with each other.
I know. This is so exciting. So my first question for you, David, is that this book really is a very traumatic account of your Vietnam experience. And I would like to know how difficult it was for you to write. I mean, this was almost 40 years ago that all of this happened.
Right. It wasn't an easy book to write. But it was one I was compelled to write. I knew that I had suffered from post-traumatic stress for decades, and I knew that there were returning Afghan and Iraqi veterans with PTSD, and I was asking them, please tell what happened to you. But I was a liar. I had not told my own story. I wrote my memoir to finally tell others the answer to the question that they often ask me, what happened over there? I wrote the book so that other combat veterans of any conflict might find the internal strength to answer the others. I wrote the book to give meat and substance to the PTSD conversations that are being discussed more and more frequently. I'd just like to give credit to Victor R. Volkman, the publisher, for his personal and professional help, and I send him my many thanks.
Yes, he did a wonderful job helping you out with this book, and so we thank him as well. So tell us about post-traumatic stress syndrome. I can't get that out today.
It's hard to live with, let alone.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'll tell you what first of all, the psychiatric community says.
Okay.
PTSD is an acronym for post-traumatic stress disorder. I take exception to the word disorder, but that's only personal. I'd rather refer to it as a syndrome, as you spoke, or as a casualty rather than a victim.
Interesting.
The Psychiatric Association has written down symptoms to look for to include that the person had been exposed to near-death experiences or the threat of serious injury. And as you so accurately pointed out, that includes car accidents, home invasions, rape, physical and mental abuse, to go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things psychs look for is that the person responds to the experience with intense fear, that the event is re-experienced, not just recalled as a memory of something pleasant or unpleasant, but the casualty finds themselves in the moment experiencing it as if it were happening again. I did, and they do, have recurrent distressing recollections of the event or events. They dream of it. I mentioned re-experiencing. It's a sense of reliving the event.
So, David, in that re-experiencing, do you go right back into that event and don't really have any awareness of the reality that you're in? Is that how, are you that far back into that re-experiencing phase?
Yes. The quick answer is yes.
Wow. Okay.
What really happens in my case was that the time of day would be the same as it was. The senses of smell, sight, and hearing were exactly as they were. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't matter whether I was asleep or awake. If it was day or night, it was being there.
Mm-hmm.
Very tough to live with.
I imagine. I mean, I can't even fully imagine, but... Mm.
Makes for a disturbed employee when all of a sudden they're just not there.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. A thing in my past, though, happily.
Yes, yes. So really, a lot of people now consider post-traumatic stress disorder. They really feel that that's synonymous with the Vietnam War. I guess that's really when this became a known psychological problem. So when you came back from Vietnam, did you know something was wrong with you, and did you know about PTSD?
First, the last part. I did not know about PTSD.
Mm.
PTSD, as you say, was kind of defined in the Vietnam era,
mm-hmm.
which ended in 1975. However, it wasn't until 1980 that the psychiatric community even defined it as a disorder.
Okay.
So in my case, that was 13 years of knowing I was hurt, that I had lost my ability to control my emotions to a great degree, and all I knew was that I was broken, and I was very ashamed of it.
Mm. Is that the prevailing emotion, do you feel?
I feel so.
Yeah.
I think that any PTSD casualty has associations of embarrassment, weakness, less than what they were or could be. It's a regrettable condition. Thank God it's treatable.
Yes, that there is an awareness and there are therapies that can really help with it. So on a deeply personal level, tell us about the experience of PTSD. How would you describe that state of mind?
For me, Juanita, when I came home, I came home to an angry, cruel civilian world. Vietnam veterans were hated.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I had pierced the veil of ordinary human experience. Once through that veil, which remains forever tattered, there's no way back. I had high anxiety. I was mortally afraid of others. I had deep depression bouts. My actions, though I thought I was being patriotic, remained profoundly remorseful to me. I distrusted everyone else. No one and no thing was safe. I was haunted by nightmares. I slept, and when I was awake, I'd have what I call daymares. And like I just told you before, it's being right back in Vietnam, physically and mentally. Uncomfortable.
Very. Tell us a little more, David, about how you came about to enlisting in the Marines and then ending up on the battlefield. Because I believe that you didn't it wasn't your full intention to just be placed right on the battlefield and in combat.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody really wants to put in for it unless they have no idea. Back then, this is 1966, I was a computer programmer. That was a cutting-edge technology job.
No kidding. In 66, computers, I mean, most people don't even know that computers were really around at that time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's what gave my addled brain the idea that if I went in the service, I was going to be drafted, Juanita. So I wanted to go in the service, get it over with, and get out as quick as possible. The only branch of the services that offered the shortest enlistment in the least amount of time to go, therefore time to come home,
mm-hmm.
was the Marine Corps.
Okay.
That was the last place I stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And the recruiter, being like, I guess, any other recruiter, made the promise, albeit almost the guarantee, that with my computer skills, that's what they would use me for. I didn't know that they were looking for self-defense experts and fodder for their cannons.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up one of few at the time graduating from boot camp and going straight into infantry.
Is that right? So you didn't touch a computer at all?
No, I didn't.
Oh, God.
I didn't come near one.
Oh, boy.
That's a shame for them and a shame for me.
Yes, absolutely.
But like Kurt Vonnegut, it says, hi-ho.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's an important lesson as well for people that are listening to recruiters, that they are going to probably tell you anything to get you to enlist.
Yes, don't think that they're facially disfigured. It's tongue-in-cheek
mm-hmm.
that they're looking at when they're speaking to recruiters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you, David, you hadn't had a violent upbringing or anything like that. I'd like to know what your opinion was about the practice of killing in war and how really that changed after you went to Vietnam and you experienced all of this.
The act or the art of killing is a two-headed dragon, in my opinion, and in my experience. I remember being in battle, taking sight with my rifle, shooting it and killing my first Viet Cong.
Mm-hmm.
The elation that I felt was intoxicating.
Really?
I had done exactly what I wanted to, and I had succeeded to the maximum extent. I had killed before I was killed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was saving citizens, their freedom, and I was fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
The emotional experience of utter remorse and having violated my principles of God immediately followed that elation.
Mm-hmm.
And the spike and valley on a line, if it were an earthquake graph, would go to either end of the paper.
Is that right?
Yeah. And it was that same with the four others that I knowingly killed.
Mm-hmm.
And the others that were wounded and killed in the heat of larger battles. Not something to seek.
Sure.
As an experience.
Sure, sure.
Certainly one that is never forgotten.
Did that initial emotional rush that you got, did that surprise you?
The remorse did.
The remorse.
The elation for having been an expert at what I was asked to do was exactly what I sought.
Mm. So do you think there was a disconnect there, but then when you realized what happened?
Yes, I do. I think there was a couple seconds of blank. And therein lies the heart of what I think post-traumatic stress is.
Yes.
There are lapses of memory. Although things go on, you forget them for the other emotions that you're trying to cope with at mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. Healing comes from finally understanding what all of those things were.
What happened, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of coping strategies did you develop to get by the day-to-day traumatic experience of being in a war zone?
The first was to block the down trauma, the remorse.
Okay, yeah.
The second was to make myself as battle-ready as I could be and to keep all of my weapons and equipment in immaculate working order.
Mm.
I turned myself into a machine, frankly. Mm. It didn't work in retrospect, but that's the only way I thought I could do it, is shut down and go forward. Mm. At the end, the only solace I found was in reading and trying to understand my Bible.
So faith played a big part?
It did.
Yeah.
I think it saved my life, frankly.
Mm. Let me ask you a question about limiting that secondary emotional response that you had. You know, I imagine that that's why a lot of veterans turn to addictions and that sort of thing. What did you do to cope with that remorse?
After I was out of the military and back at civilian life, I turned to alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate that I had resolved never to use drugs. But I was naive in assuming that alcohol was not an addictive drug.
Mm-hmm.
So I drank daily and nightly so that I could get sleep. I didn't drink during my working days, but that didn't exclude me from trying to numb my experience.
Yeah.
And I did that through 3 drunk driving offenses before I finally figured out that wasn't the answer either.
Is that right? How long after you got back home did all of this start to happen for you?
I didn't seek help until 1986. I didn't know that there was any form of treatment for post-traumatic stress. I'd mentioned the 13-year lapse between 1967 and 1980.
Right. So is that basically your spiral down, that 13 years?
It was close to 20 years, 19 to 20 years of spiraling down.
Wow.
In 1986, I was living with a woman who, in a matter of 24 hours, told me what I could do with myself physically, and that she was moving in with another younger man, which she did. That drove me to a sense of betrayal and despair. What I did then was turn to the Veterans Administration for some kind of help.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, PTSD was so new, there were no effective treatments within the VA. And so I went through 18 months of their version of group therapy to no avail, and finally dropped out of the group that I'd been involved with on a weekly basis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, your marriage that broke up, what were the expectations about your marriage before the war, and how did that change when you came back and you were spiraling with this PTSD?
Well, naively, I thought I could resume my life right where I left it.
Mm-hmm.
I was dead wrong. The golden heart, the nice kid, I took that heart with me and left it on the killing fields of Nam. I came home with a purple heart, a mere metal. In fact, all my relationships were forever altered, including my marriages.
Mm. So your book, My Two Were in Hell, you know, you really are documenting your personal experience with PTSD. So what are the bullet points for your experience of PTSD that you're sharing in your book?
Thanks for that question. It's a good one. It's a hard one, and after 208 pages, it's hard to summarize, but I'll give a brief go of it.
Okay.
I had an intense fear of others. I distrusted others. I'd been a killer. I'd nearly been killed. I'd nearly been maimed. The United States I came back to was filled with people that I loathed. They hated me and what I did for them, and that kind of in summation, my future was foreshortened by my mental and physical expenses.
Mm.
I knew that I would die a premature death. So far, in 66 years, I've proved that to be wrong. But
do you feel differently now?
I feel hope for the future.
Yes.
And that hope extends to others such as your listeners, that there is finally hope and there is a back door to that darkened room.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Amazon recently introduced Kindle, a revolutionary ebook reader that has outpaced expectations in sales. This is a sign that more people are turning to the digital delivery system of books as the practice of digital downloads spread. Let us help you get your printed book or ebook available for instant purchase on Amazon Kindle. You set your own price and collect 35% of list price on each sale. We will upload your book and optimize it for the best performance on Kindle. Please go to readerviews.com and link on the Services for Authors tab on the top menu bar. There you will find a link for more information on how we can upload your book for Kindle viewing today.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I am speaking with author David Powell about his new book, My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. You can find out more about David through his website at mytourinhell.com. What I just love so much about your story, David, and you do go into this in your book, My Tour in Hell, because after your marriage did break up and you really didn't find help with the VA, you ended up going and working outside of that with another organization, and this is where you discovered a form of therapy that has really changed your life called Traumatic Incident Reduction Therapy, TIR.
Absolutely.
So tell us about it.
Traumatic Incident Reduction is an informal therapy wherein two people, one a practitioner or quote-unquote therapist, sits alone in a comfortable, safe setting with a client or the PTSD casualty. What they do is select a specific traumatic incident that has a finite beginning, a duration, and a finite end. Then the work is as follows. The client goes to the beginning of the incident, recalls it as fully as possible in silence to the end of that incident, and then reports what happened out loud.
Mm-hmm.
This is done time and again, each time with the question being asked, does it feel better, the same, or worse than before? That therapy session lasts until there is some sense of understanding and release of that emotional charge.
Okay.
That can take from 15 minutes upwards to 2 hours. The longest session I had was about an hour and 20 minutes, and I go into detail in my book about that very episode.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was an amazing session that you had. Are you having physical release at this time? Like, are you reliving when you're silently remembering? Are you reliving physically on some level what's going on?
Physically and emotionally, it's just like re-experiencing it. Again, saying you are there at the time and place and in the surroundings as though it were happening at the time. The end, when there is a release, it is physical, it is emotional, and it's unburdening.
I was just going to ask, can you feel that release in your body and that you're changed after that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would submit that it could be physically observed, the relief. I felt on several occasions an exhalation of a breath that I'd held for 20 years.
Oh, that's powerful.
Shoulders that slumped, that were rigid against my neck for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what I needed.
How many sessions did you have, David?
Approximately 20.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little storehouse of traumatic experiences that numbered more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that by blowing the bigger ones, by getting the relief that I so dearly needed,
mm-hmm.
the others became less intense in their recollection.
It's like you broke and open the dam.
It was, yes, ma'am. It was like in bowling, it was knocking not just one pin, but several down with one ball.
Yes.
It was incredible. Highly recommend it.
Do you still get any of these sessions, or are you finished now?
I'm pretty much finished now. Mm-hmm. In fact, so much so that the Traumatic Incident Reduction Association put me up room and board and gave me free instruction in the practice of facilitation.
Really?
And yes, and I could not have done that had I not sufficiently taken a mastery of my own emotions.
Yes, healed yourself.
Right, and so much so that now I can objectively and without judgment walk another person through their trauma without owning it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or comparing it to what I had been through.
So you're completely detached from it.
True.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of things can you do or experience now that you couldn't before your TIR?
Oh, a few things that will seem simple, I suppose. I can watch the flag being raised. I can watch troops march. I can sing patriotic songs from beginning to end, if I know all the words, without choking up and crying and avoiding that kind of emotional flooding. I can engage strangers in conversation. I can trust others, not thinking that they intend to do me harm, but they intend to do the best they can do. And if they fail, it's not an attack, but merely a shortcoming on their part. There's other many wins, but those are a few.
What about your relationships and your relationship with yourself at this point?
I've learned to a point of knowing that I am not a faulted individual.
Mm.
I deserve to be thanked. I deserve to be forgiven. I deserve to forgive myself and accept that forgiveness. That makes me, in my opinion, a very warm, honest human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I carry that into relationships, one of which I'm currently enjoying with Susan, that has gone on nearly a decade.
Is that right?
Yep.
Congratulations.
Yep. Thank you so.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so. That's after several failed attempts. And again, I point to TIR and my personal redemption.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned earlier when we were talking about shame, how is the emotion of shame play a part in your life today?
I don't own shame anymore. Rather, I say, and I have Bible testimony that supports it, you did what you were asked to do to the best of your ability without the taint of cruelty. And owning that destroys a feeling of shame.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Thank you.
So, David, what are your current thoughts? I'd like to get your opinion on the current state that we're in right now in the Middle East and in the huge military forces that are over there. What are your thoughts regarding military service, patriotism, and going to war at this point in your life and in your journey?
Thank you. At this point, I have accepted that war is going to be waged as long as human beings live. I believe that with the proper attitude of not being a sinner going in will allow someone who has not sinned to return. I believe that it is noble and right to serve your country and protect others and yourself. I would do it again. Thankfully, I'm too old to do it again. I believe that we are still leaving our service people behind, even though it is almost common conversation to discuss post-traumatic stress. It's still not helping. There have been at least 70,000 suicides in recent years. That's more names than there are names on the Vietnam Wall.
Wow, isn't that something?
It's awesome and tragic. Mm. And what I'm trying to do, and I'm in just in the birth stages of it, is to develop an alternative outreach via or by way of employing TIR techniques and therapies in a non-government environment.
Okay, so the VA hasn't really accepted TIR therapy at this point?
They have not, even though they come ever closer to it with such things as tapping, emotional freedom techniques,
yes.
Eye movement, desensitization, and reprogramming, and the like. They don't, as yet, embrace TIR because it cannot be statistically and clinically proven, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But my opinion also is that everything should be tried until there is some resolution. You don't just have the Cadillac.
Right.
You've got the Volkswagen. You've got the Red Ryder. You've got the tricycle. Try anything. Try everything until you help the veteran.
And what might be a breakthrough therapy for one person may not be the right fit for somebody else. So I imagine that you have to try a lot of different things, like you say.
As a PTSD casualty, you try until you win.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that TIR is the end-all, but I am saying it worked for me, it's worked for others, and if nothing thus far has worked, try it.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work, try something else.
Try something else.
Don't give up.
Do you have any idea what percentage of soldiers are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that may have some form of combat trauma?
I do, and that's just from the national news media, the international news, and other reports of statistics that range between 15 and 20%. That's where the government acknowledges post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't account for the quasi-liars that say, I'm just fine, thank you, leave me alone, don't ask me any questions. No, I don't have post-traumatic stress. Big boys don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably another 40%.
You think that high?
I do.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. So
I've been to a couple reunions, two, maybe three, and they are so sparsely populated with combat veterans that is tragic.
Oh.
Speaks volumes for denial.
And you think that they're not going because they do have some form of PTSD, or they just don't want to go there?
I think they do have a form of PTSD, the severity of which I don't know, but it is severe enough to be ashamed of it and thus hide it.
Mm. That's such a good point.
Thank you.
Do you think that the young men and women that are enlisting in the military today really have any idea as to what they may see and experience while on duty and how this really may change them?
Would you kindly ask me that again?
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like we kind of cut out there. I was just wondering, David, if you think that the young men and women that are enlisting in the military today have any idea as to what they may see or experience while they're on duty and how this can actually change them?
I don't, Juanita, and that in part is why I wrote the book. No one, to my experience, has really articulated their own personal drama to a point where it can be referenced and perhaps understood. It's a hidden wound. It's consciously hidden, but the pain is nonetheless real and deep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything can prepare one for an experience outside the ordinary range of human living.
Mm-hmm.
To kill or be killed is an emotion that defies vocabulary.
Yeah.
And as such, it's completely internalized and personalized.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to get them to get it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that the family of soldiers or recruits of what's going on in the Middle East, the soldiers that are coming back, is there anything that the family should look for or expect from them when they come back home?
Yes, there are. And I have put on my website some warning signs, some symptoms that loved ones and family members can look for in their returning veterans.
Okay, great.
I also encourage the veterans to do self-assessments inside the VA or outside and really honestly answer the objective questions that lead to the criteria for any form of post-traumatic stress. But it has to be a self-motivation.
Mm-hmm.
To force someone to face it again is to make them relive it, and that's cruel.
Yeah. I imagine if they're not ready to embrace it and to face it, then that can really almost maybe cause secondary trauma to a person and drive that deeper in their psyche.
That is excellently put.
Mm-hmm.
I should record that and write it and claim it as my own.
You go right ahead, David.
Thank you. So
tell me what this journey of healing that you've gone through has really taught you.
Another deep question, but one I'm happy to answer if I can. It has taught me that life is just that. We're put on this earth to make our own decisions, have our own experiences, and choose what we think is the right way to go. If it doesn't go the way you'd like it, then I urge that you do something to make peace with it. Make yourself remember it, not relive it, and put it somewhere where you can remember it, acknowledge it, and put it back down. Don't live with it, and don't think that you're not living with it and consequently hurting others.
Mm.
You owe it to yourself to heal.
Do you still feel any of the effects of PTSD? And what does a regular day look like for you on an emotional scale?
Emotional scale, I am at about a 5, which says that I'm out and about trying to be happy, succeeding often, but left with the indelible impression of the experiences I went through.
Mm-hmm.
I did not associate that with guilt or shame. Rather, it was something that happened. There's an adjective that precedes that expression. It happened, and it if you're fortunate as I am, it is in your past.
Mm.
Let it lie there, and let it not influence the way you are as a human being to yourself or others in the day today and in the future to come.
Mm, wonderfully put.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you were a keynote speaker at the Vermont Veterans Combat Stress Symposium, which was held in the early part of last year in 2007. I'm not sure if they will be making that an annual event, but if you can just tell us a little bit maybe about that or any other public appearances that you are going to be making or have made that are noteworthy.
Sure, thanks. I was the keynote speaker, quote-unquote, at the Vermont Veterans Symposium. I was put together by an author you know named Lisa Faber-Silk.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you interviewed her recently.
I did. That was a great interview with Lisa.
It was yes, I enjoyed it as well.
Mm.
She put it together, flew me out, put me up in a nice hotel room, and I talked to the folks for a little over an hour, and I thought it was productive. I don't know if it's going to annualize or not. Also, after the book was published, I was interviewed by the Pentagon, and they produced that filmed interview on their website called Recon, and I think the program's titled The Wounds Within.
Okay, great.
Also, there is a prestigious Midwestern television station, some 4 or 5 million viewers, where, again, they flew out and interviewed me for a program called Retirement Living,
mm.
discussing PTSD, and that was quite well received, I'm told.
I imagine. That sounds like a bit of an interesting twist.
Yes, and it was aimed, I enjoyed it. It was aimed at older veterans who are now coming out of the closet with post-traumatic stress that I thought they were right on in addressing.
You're a pioneer, David.
Oh, you're kind. I hope that I make a difference in at least one other human being.
Oh, well, you have, so.
That's kind.
Yes, I know that you have. Is this basically your own personal mission at this point in your life, just to shed more light on PTSD and hopefully bring more people into the awareness and out of their shame and their pain?
That is absolutely my goal.
Yeah.
Without wavering.
Well, we support you, David. I just want to thank you so much for talking with me today. This has been a great, great interview, and I just appreciate you coming on the program.
I thoroughly enjoyed myself. Thank you so much, and God bless you and yours.
Oh, thank you so much, David. We'll talk again, I know.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Okay, bye.
All right, listeners, there you go. I've been talking with David Powell. What a wonderful, wonderful interview. His website, mytourinhell.com. The book, My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. Check it out. It's on shelves now, published by Loving Healing Press. And I know that you can order it through online and local booksellers. So thanks so much for listening today. This has been Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.